Hey everyone, this is Coach Mark Nolan. I want to welcome you back to another episode of Don't Outkick Your Coverage. We are the only 100% podcast series in the world dedicated solely to the high school athlete and their parents and guardians to deal with everything college sports recruiting, especially post-COVID, and what the National Association, Athletic Association is doing, and all the lawsuits that are coming down the road in every major sport. And so, you know, here's a question for you. Who am I and why should you be listening to me? Well, I've been dealing with the NCAA since I signed my national letter of intent back in 1973. Yes, I am an old fart. And have helped over 4,000 high school athletes and their parents in obtaining over $200 million in athletic scholarships across every major college division in the sports of baseball, basketball, football, soccer, track and field, lacrosse, and yes, wrestling. My goal for each podcast is to let you, the listeners, know that the task of becoming a next level student athlete, and yes, you parents, this is not an easy one. And the NCAA is not your friend, and especially post-COVID. This has been my passion for nearly the past 50 years. Heck, I even came out of retirement to not only start this goofy podcast, but also wrote an international best-selling book entitled College Athletic Scholarships, The Path to Recruiting Success in the New Age of the Transfer Portal and NIL. So today, we're going to have another phenomenal guest that I met. Didn't really meet him live, but he was at a show I was at. So I want to bring on Ben Kerr and listen to his amazing story, parents, and as well as to you, the student athletes out there. You know, one of the things we do, we have many special guests to include former players I coached who made it to the next level and the professional ranks to leading doctors and experts in the field of nutrition and physical fitness, along with parents and athletes who'll be sharing their journeys to playing college sports and beyond, as well as college level coaches and other industry experts around the biggest hurdles a high school athlete will be facing trying to get into the college to play the sport they love. And that simply is your commitment to wanting to play at the next level. I hope you'll subscribe, like, and comment on our podcast because this really is dedicated to you and your dreams. So thanks for joining. So let's kick this podcast off. Today, we are excited to have as our guest, Mr. Ben Kerr, who I had the chance to listen to at an event last September. He has an amazing story that left many of the 5,000 people who were at the event sitting in awe. And I can't wait to have each of you listen to Ben's story of adversity to All-American and then to gold medal world champion last October in the Greco-Roman competition, outscoring his four opponents by a total of 24-2. Ben has agreed to waive his speaking fee for today and donate his entire fee to the Children's Craniofacial Association, the CCA, and I will be gladly contributing 100% of his fee, the $225, to the CCA shortly after this podcast, which is a great cause. Ben, good afternoon and welcome to Don't Outkick Your Coverage.
Mark, you're the man. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm super passionate about this. I mean, I think athletes around the world are more and more rare because athletics is hard. It takes grit. It takes tenacity. It takes a lot of hard things to be able to show up and shine. And so what you're doing is phenomenal. I think your book is phenomenal. I think that's incredible. Everyone should have that in their hands. I mean, that's the first time I've heard about this book, but dude, knowing what you're doing is absolutely, phenomenal. No wonder why it's a bestseller. People need that today.
Thank you. And I'm going to send you a free copy and I'm even going to autograph it for you so you can send it to everybody. Okay. So listen, I want to, you know, I think today's podcast is really dedicated to your adversity, climbing the ladder early on, what I heard down there to an All-American and to a world championship. So, you know, Ben, why did you start on this journey of wanting to help young athletes out who have some adversity in their lives? And what are you most proud of from that journey?
So for me, coach, I think that the sport, and this is speaking to a bunch of coaches and parents out there, and this is what you should really focus on. I think the sport is actually the illusion. Well, what do I mean by that? I used to coach a bunch in the sport of wrestling and run a gym. And I would tell parents that. I'm like, parents, just FYI, I want you to know that what I'm doing, this wrestling sport, is actually illusion of why I have your kids coming here. I'm actually having them come here to be an incredible human. It just happens to be that we get the kids here thinking that they're going to put on their wrestling shoes, they're going to put on their knee pads and headgear, and they think they're going to do a sport the whole time, where in fact they are. But what I'm going to teach them, we call it sweat therapy, is what I'm going to teach them when I get their heart rate up and they start sweating. I'm going to teach them principles, values that are timeless, that's going to allow them to leave this room.
Oh, lost you there for a second, Ben.
As a
Hopefully he's
better
coming back.
wrestler, yes, but more important, as a better human. And so I think it's so important that us as humans, us as coaches, reaches out to them and know and shoot for raising incredible humans number one. And in turn, the athlete will become a better athlete.
Oh, amen, brother. Amen. And for those, who really don't know your story, Ben, could you share with us just some of it? And I think it'd be great because what you gave to us down at ClickFunnels was truly life-changing for many people who were there. So if you wouldn't mind, just give us, a brief 30 or 40 seconds of your background.
100%. Thanks for asking. I was born with something called Cruzon syndrome 40 years ago. And the doctors would tell my parents that I'd live a different life. And a matter of fact, that's exactly what I did. I chose because I would look different, because Cruzon syndrome is a craniofacial difference. My face would look different. I'd have massive surgeries of 12, 14 hours where they would cut my head open, put a trach in my throat to be able to function. They'd wire my mouth shut and I would look different. And they would tell my parents that I definitely probably wouldn't play contact sports. And I learned at a young age to defy the odds. I learned at a young age to learn how to say, oh, yeah, watch me. And then I also learned at a young age that when my coaches would tell me to do 20 push-ups, I knew that that was the minimum. I knew that that was normal, and I chose to be disobedient to normal. I chose to be disobedient to average. I chose that if I wanted to be anybody, if I wanted to show up, if I wanted to shine, if I wanted to stand out, then I couldn't do the minimum. In the sport of wrestling and many other sports, they have podiums at the end of the tournament. They have podiums at the end of the championships. And then they give these medals out. Well, in the sport of wrestling, there's one individual. And that one individual at the top of the podium that gets the gold medal, he ain't the one. She ain't the one that does normal. She ain't the one that does average. She ain't the one that just listens to the coach and obeys. They listen to the coach and do more. They listen to the coach and go way above and beyond because they know gold medals aren't made by regular. They know gold medals aren't made by the people who just show up and check in and check out. They know by the people that show up with purpose, with passion, and they're willing to be present that they're the ones who deserve the gold medal. They're the ones who deserve the ability to stand out a little bit.
I love that. I love that. And it's that, it's that focus of like, we used to always say they don't put the fourth place finisher on the Wheaties box. I mean, they do that for a reason, right? And when you talk about all the sweat that we do as wrestlers, I used to hate the 2 minute spin drill at the end of wrestling practice. I was horrible anyway, and I hated that, right? But it was discipline, and all 12 of us in our wrestling classes had to do that. Regardless if you were good bad or ugly, we all had to do that. So it that did give me great discipline. And I had that discipline because I had come from a broken family. My mom and dad had gotten divorced my freshman year. You know, I was one of the first ones in my neighborhood to get divorced. So I had to be like you. I had to be a little different. I was out of the norm. Now, I never thought I was out of the norm because all I was doing was to try to play with my friends and hang out. But yeah, I was. I was ostracized because, hey, I was the only Irish Catholic kid in the whole neighborhood that was came from a divorced family. Years later, I recognized that. But, you know, as we know, as athletes, the challenges we face on the mental side of sports, and there's a lot of it. And can you share some of your thoughts on why, how you went through this mental side of conditioning, you know, when you were younger and even today when you were going through the world championship?
Absolutely. You know what? There's a lot of coaches that say, never give up, never give up, never give up. And I love that. I absolutely love that. But it's hard sometimes as I've gotten older, and I've gone to say that to athletes, that it's hard for them to really buy it and chew on and to actually do. Because I don't know if anybody can ever not ever give up. Everyone has a breaking point. Everyone has a time where they are just like, I can't do this anymore. And so I've really thought about this. I'm like, how can we win this mentality game? But how can we believe we can actually achieve it? Because oftentimes when I was told never give up, I'm like, I don't know if I can really never give up. But guess what I can do? I can give up in a two-man sport. I can give up second. And I'm going to go back to your spin drill. If you're doing the spin drill, and let's say the bottom guy is also spinning, you may not be able to do that for 75 hours straight. But guess what? You could do it one more time than the other person.
Yeah.
You could do it just one more spin than the other person. So that gave me comfort. It gave me confidence. It gave me an absolute reality and focus that I could give up second. All I had to do was outlast the person in front of me. I didn't have to outlast everybody in the world. I didn't have to outlast 7 days without sleeping. I could just outlast that person in front of me who I knew bled, who I knew breathed, who I knew slept just like I slept, who I knew put his shoes on the way that I put his shoes on, who I knew had to make weight, who I knew had weaknesses and strength just like I did. But if I could just do one more, and if I could just outlast him, then that would be enough. And that, to me, spoke volumes. If I could just give up second, be willing to outlast that person, whoo, that would take me a long distance in life.
You know, and amen, my brother John, when I went through a ranger school, so I was an Army Ranger. And, you know, one of the things my brother John said to me, he was this fifth SF guy, he said, look, when you get to ranger school, it's mental. They're going to, those drill sergeants, those DIs, the black hats, you know, with the RIs, the ranger instructors, they're going to want you to make up. They want you to give up and you can't give up. You just can't. You have to realize that if you want it this bad, it's the top 1% of the 1% in the United States Army to get through that. So if you can get through the mental side of conditioning and don't give up, you're so much better off. And I love the point where you talk about just being better than that one other. Because, you know, Ben, one of the things I asked the guys to do, look, anybody can go out and kick field goals and punt the ball when it's 70 degrees outside on a nice sunny day. Do it at 6 o'clock in the morning, okay, when the lights are on. Do it at 8 o'clock at night when the lights are on. Do it when it's raining outside. Do it when it's snowing outside. Do the things that are different that college coaches are going to want to see you do, because anybody can kick a ball at 70, 75 degrees, right? So, you know, from that standpoint, I think that's the mental side of conditioning that we as athletes love to talk about, because it is, it's like our own genre, you know, the mental side of conditioning. So what is your favorite part of your job in coaching? And I guess the least favorite part of your job, if you had one.
I mean, I don't coach full time, but I have the opportunity to to coach, and I love it. What's my favorite part? I would say absolutely pouring into the athletes. Now, I heard someone say that one time, and I didn't really understand what that meant. I'm like, pouring into the athletes, what does that mean? It means our entire life, we keep putting this knowledge or water inside our own vessel, right? We have this knowledge, we have these moves, and we're not all, no athlete is ever just us. It's a little piece of this, a little piece of that. I mean, you had just talked before we started filming, right? These kickers in the Super Bowl, you coached.
Mm-hmm.
And their skill and their talent and their mentality and their approach is a little piece of you. It's a little piece of their coaches. Heck, it's a little piece of our wives and our kids and our grandfathers and
Absolutely.
Our parents. And so I've thought about everything that's become me over the course of my 40-year life. And I think of it like a big pitcher of full of water or knowledge. And I think as I go into these kids or go into these young adults or men that I coach in college, I think about just having their glass, not as full because they haven't lived the life that I've lived as many years. And I just think about pouring into them my knowledge. And knowledge comes through positivity. Knowledge comes through patience. Knowledge comes in coaching. The most consistent and the most impactful coaches, I believe, also comes through listening. I have been the coach, and I've also not been the coach that's listened well. But the moment that I choose to listen, because sometimes I just go in there and just start dousing them with like a fire hose, like I'm going to pour into you. But sometimes, and the most strategic times when I sit back and I find out what they need to be poured into and what area they need to be poured into, I'm able to focus in that area. Because though they're showing up for wrestling and we're going to work on technique that day, it may be they just broke up with their girlfriend.
Right.
Or that little girl may just broke up with a boyfriend. Or that little girl may have went home yesterday and her dad was still at the bar. And so it didn't matter what technique you took them through that day. It was, can you love on them? Can you pour into them? And can you just, and this is one of my favorite things I love to do, I love to be their number one fan. I absolutely love nobody else to be cheering louder than the coach. Nobody else to be pouring into him more than me. Nobody else. If I can be their number one confidant, their number one fan, their number one person who cheers them on, win, lose, or draw. For an example, I go in there all the time and it's not really focused on winning. It's like, hey, win, lose, or draw. Guess what, little Tommy? The goal today is making this individual across the line never want to wrestle Tommy again.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't care if you win, brother. I care about you putting it out there and going up or down, arm swinging. And when you put that potential, when you put that effort, when you put that fun personality on the line, you're going to really enjoy this. And when you put some enjoyment and fun and positivity and you pour into these guys, this will be a lifelong journey, a lifelong sport that they'll really, really grow to love.
Yeah. And that's very well said, Ben. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, experts in our field talk about, you know, how to do things on a mental side of the house. Some talk about other things on the physical side of the house, and we all have our mental and physical things that we do. But is there like one thing that you might disagree with on either the mental side of training or the strength conditioning side, and how you look as them as athletes when they're talking about, hey, my other coach said I should do this. What do you do when an expert that is telling them one thing and you're telling them something else? Do you ever like, well, that's their opinion? Or do you pretty much say, hey, take from all of us that little piece that are going to make you better. What are your thoughts on that?
Are you talking about the mental side specifically?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm 100% believer on shooting for goals and writing them down. And I think a lot of people, and doing it in a big way. I mean, like, some people think that there's cockiness or arrogance. I don't think it does. I think you lack some confidence. And Conor McGregor says this really well. He's a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
He says the moment that you speak a goal into existence and actually have the confidence to say it out loud is the moment you're willing at that point to actually go for it and back it up. I'll give you an example. When I was younger in high school, and again, some people think, oh man, this is arrogant. I call it backing up your goal. There's a lot of kids that I've talked with, a lot of athletes, whatever age. I mean, I literally have the opportunity right now to go into colleges, and it's amazing how they've just like don't have the confidence to put their goals down. But yet they shoot high for goals, but they don't write them down and they don't speak them out into the universe. Now, here's an example. When I was in high school, and there had never ever been a three-time state champion wrestler before. And so I come medal in my junior year, because in my high school, we started a sophomore year. My junior year, my parents gave me a Letterman's jacket. If you don't know what that is, it's
oh,
just like,
yeah.
Yeah, I think people know what that is. It's a school jacket, right? Mm-hmm. To show your pride and stuff. And my parents gave me a Letterman's jacket for early Christmas in October. And so they gave it to me and they said, Ben, put the patches that you want to put on your jacket. And I did. Well, I had one state one time at this point. Remember that. I told my parents that on my shoulder. And they sewed this in. This isn't just like a Velcro thing. It's sewn on. It's very difficult to take it off. And if you, like, you can tell if you do. My parents said, what do you want on your shoulder? You have one more spot. I said, Mom and Dad, put the number 3 and the letter X. Think about what that means. As a high school junior, only having one state one time, I had set my confidence and my expectation to the point I was willing to literally sew it on my Letterman's jacket that I would wear every day. I mean, that's just shy of tattooing it on my arm, basically, right?
Right.
And I'll never forget going into conference or region my junior year losing. And I remember people in school the next day,
they couldn't
saying,
wait.
Ben, they said, what are you going to do? Are you going to take that number off? Are you going to rip it off? I said, well, I still have state. Just watch me. And I remember hearing all the doubters, but then I remember hearing all the people believe me, step up, back me up, surround me. Because I spoke out my goals, not cocky, not arrogant, but confident. And because I was able to say, guys, I can't do it without you, Mom and Dad, friends, comrades, teammates, principal, literally my principal, the next week after losing in conference, found me during the assembly and says, Ben, let's go to the wrestling room. You don't have time to sit in this assembly. I know your goals. I said, how do you know my goals? He says, because you wear it every day on your arm and you wear your goals out loud. And Ben, that's a goal that I want you to achieve because now I feel like I'm part of it. Let's go get this. He didn't say you go get this. He said, let's get this. I want to tell you something. When Conor McGregor spoke it out loud on national television, it went worldwide. Everybody was watching him wanting to win the second belt. Why? Because he spoke it into existence.
Mm-hmm.
everybody, whether you liked him or not, you wanted to see it actually happen. You wanted to see someone actually achieve. And I'll tell you what, a couple years later, I went on to win a three-time state championship. I never had to take that off my arm. And I'm not saying that you'll achieve every goal in the book. I know that because this year or last year, going into the world championships, I had a goal to be a world champ. I wrote it everywhere on my mirrors and my locker. And I tell you what, I didn't achieve it. But I tell you what, I didn't achieve it in freestyle. But I learned.
Trucker Roman. Mm-hmm.
And a couple days later, I had another shot. And I tell you what, I would have never gotten to the gold medal if I wouldn't have got the silver medal in high school. I don't think I would have won my three state titles if I wouldn't have lost. Let's remember, the losses break our limits.
Yep.
We learn from them, we rise from them, and we become someone that we never thought we could be.
Hey, again, I mean, amen. You know, it's so well said. So, you know, if you had the attention of the whole athletic sports world for 5 minutes, what would you say to them? And I mean, in my experiences, this is a global question for all athletes and their parents who are playing sports, regardless of the sport.
I'd say two things, two absolute truths. And I'm going to say the one and the most obvious one first, that a lot of people can shoot towards, and they see it very clearly, because this is the physical repetition. For some reason, the physical repetition and understanding thereof.
Oh, sorry, lost you again there, Ben, for a second. Hopefully people are staying with us.
Yeah.
Back again?
Yep. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're good now. Sorry about that.
So I'm telling you this. There's two things that I would teach. Number one, and the most obvious one, is the physical repetition. And I'm telling you this. If you tell someone to do 5 push-ups, they could easily think about doing 6, 7, or 8. And so number one, I would say be disobedient to average and always do more. Number two, and probably the most difficult, find a way in your life to do mental repetitions. Now, what does that mean? Before, I would run in college into a stadium of 20,000 people in Philadelphia, being unranked at Utah Valley University, that had just jumped from junior college to Division I, the biggest jump in NCAA history. I went in there going against a kid that was undefeated, ranked number 4 in the country. My next match would be against a 3-4-time All-American, a guy who beat me twice. And I tell you what, when you've already done the physical repetitions, it's the mental repetitions that make the most difference. I want to tell you, as I was in Philadelphia, I ran up the steps of Rocky Steps. This is on YouTube. You can go watch it.
Oh,
Ben
yeah.
Kerr running the Rocky Steps. I look out over Philadelphia, being unranked. And I'll never forget thinking like I was Rocky and telling myself, and this is where the physical repetitions come in, Ben, you can do this. Ben, you will do this. Ben, watch. Tell everyone to watch you. Watch me achieve. Watch me defy the odds. Watch me set a new standard. Watch me stand out. And I believe that as you start to understand breaking what you think your limitations are for repetitions physically, and the number two and most important, set your repetitions and standard mentally. So what does that mean? I'll give an example. There's a guy named Kyle Dake in the sport of wrestling who ended up being one of the only 4-time national champions. And what he would do, and this is a mental repetition, right before bed, before he went to sleep, he'd grab a journal and he would write down his name, his weight, national champion. Year number two, he would grab his journal every night. He would write it twice. Year number three, he would write it three times. Year number four, he would write it four times. He's went on to become a world champion multiple times. That is a perfect example of mental repetitions. When you go on to understand what that means, you will win before you ever step on the court, before you ever step on the mat, before you go then and there, that then all you have to do is just make it happen. All you have to do is prep happen. When you know what it smells like, feels like, tastes like, and looks like to be on the podium at the very, very top.
Oh, amen. My wife and I do a thing called FOP, which stands for financially, organizationally, and personally. So every year we used to write it down. We used to write down all our goals. Financially, I want to get out of debt. Organizationally, I want to climb the ladder. Because, I was a corporate guy for the better part of my life. The kicking and punting I did part-time on a part-time basis for 49 years. And personally and professionally, what did I want to do? Very similar when you write something down, it's like you're writing that contract with yourself. And so many people don't do that nowadays. So if you had a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, metaphorically speaking, and getting a message to millions or even billions of folks out there, what would it say and why?
Man, that's powerful. I love that. I love that. You know what? Here's what I would say. I posted something today on social media and encourage you guys to go look at it, whether you're on, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever. And I posted something about one thing that's changed my life. When I was younger, I used to dream about being everybody else because of how I looked. I used to envision what it would be to be Tommy version 2.0 because of how he looked, how he dressed, how he played, whatever basketball or wrestling or whatever that was. I'm going to encourage you guys to listen to this very well, and this is what my billboard would say. Me 1.0 is greater than me pretending to be you, version 2.0.
Amen.
Let me
Amen.
say that again. Me, version 1.0, is greater to be me pretending to be you, version 2.0. What do I mean by that? My friends, I used to pretend to be other people, and I was never found in peace when I did that. I was always mimicking somebody else's shadow. Walking like them, talking like them, being like them, dressing like them, I would suffocate myself. I would suffocate who God created me to be. And I was never comfortable.
Getting a little bandwidth issue here again for Ben. So hopefully he'll pick it back up in a second. Go
Can
ahead,
you hear me
Ben.
okay?
There we go. Go ahead. Can you repeat that
Sorry
last
about
thing?
that. Yeah, and I was just saying there is an actor named Jim Carrey. He said some pretty bold statements, and just recently he said this: depression equals deep rest. When you fall into depression, it means your soul needs deep rest. Why? Depression usually means that we're acting like somebody else all the time, and our soul needs deep rest from doing that. That billboard would say those things because of this. We deserve to be us at our highest potential, version 1.0. And as we choose to not put our light under a bushel, as we choose to shine, whether it's like me with Cruzan syndrome, with all my, I call it a gift, with all my gifts that I've been given, which has taught me empathy and understanding for other people. As I choose to flex me, as I choose to buy into me, then I choose to live and shine how God has always meant for me to live and shine.
Awesome. You know, it's funny because I had six siblings, and when I was growing up, I used to hold my brother Bob in high esteem. So every time I met somebody, I say, "Hey, I'm Bob Nolan's younger brother, Mark." I'm like, and I, you know, honest to God, but I didn't realize that until I was probably 12 or 13. I'm like, why do I care about being Bob's younger brother, Mark? Look at me. Look at the stuff I'm achieving right now. I end up achieving a lot more than he did. But I never looked at myself as Mark Nolan. I always looked at myself as Bob Nolan's younger brother, Mark. Sad to say, but the reality is your 1.0 is probably better than somebody else's 2.0. That's an amazing thing to tell people. So, you know, when we talk about quotes, are there any quotes you think about often or live by? Or have in your role to help and inspire athletes and others that come in contact with you along their journey?
Absolutely. I would just go along with exactly what I said. My statement has grown. What I tell myself when I'm scared, I should say, just to be very clear, when I'm running in that crowd at the national or world championships, I tell myself certain things. Now, I call it my I am statement. I call it my personal positive self-talk or incantation. And what I tell myself is this: now I choose me. Just like I did when I was younger, I decided to choose me eventually, not everybody else's version 2.0. Now I choose me. I make a difference. I was told when I was younger that I was different. So guess what? I look different. So guess what? You might as well make a difference. And then I tell myself, you know what? I fight for light. When my life feels like it's dark, I fight for that light. I choose to ignite extraordinary. I ignite the extraordinary inside of me. I don't choose to be ordinary. I don't choose to be normal anymore, even though the majority of my life I dreamt of just being normal, just fitting in. I don't do that anymore. I choose that when people tell me I can't achieve something, I say, oh yeah, watch me. I choose to defy the odds. I choose to be a victor, not a victim. And I choose, because I was born to stand out, I choose to stand out, stand out, stand out. And I told myself that when I'm in a dark place. I don't know for you guys what that is. Maybe you can take mine. I'm more than happy to let you borrow that and use it and own it. I did that for a long time. Now, for you, it might be a song. For you, it might be poem. For you, it might be a scripture. For you, it might be a prayer. I don't know what it is for you that makes you feel confident and comfortable in that moment of chaos and indecision. But for me, it was something where every statement made me fired up. Every statement, like, I fight for light. I'm a victor. I was born to stand out. So right now I'm going to stand out. Stand out. In those moments, that's what makes me feel strong.
Awesome. So is there an unusual habit? Because we all have them as athletes. We all have them. I mean, I knew a guy that used to paint his toenails pink. He was a punter. So, you know, I'm saying that's for you. But is there one unusual habit or absurd thing that you love to do and has helped you drive you daily? Like, do you wear like one pair of socks, or is there a certain jock strap you wear, or a certain wrestling shoes you wear? Do you put your helmet on differently, or is there anything differently that you do that makes you want to stand out, that says this is part of my day-to-day routine?
I love that. That's such a good question. By the way, this podcast, you are asking such pivotal questions. Sometimes I jump on podcasts. I'll probably be on two or three just this week.
Wow.
You are asking such pivotal questions that are such takeaways. I hope people realize this. Instead of just talking about theory and what ifs, you are literally asking questions that can be immediate, like to-dos. That's
Thank you.
golden, by the way. I love what you're doing. I'll give you
Thank
two of
you.
them. I'll
Okay.
give you two of them. One of them is this. I would say that there's a moment before my match that what Tony Robbins calls make your move. It's what checks you in, checks you into the moment. Now, for me, before I'm on deck, let's say. I'm on deck, I'm up next, right? I'm getting warmed up, and I go over to the drinking fountain or the cooler, and I splash water on my hands. This is me making my move. This is what sets me in the moment. This is what wakes me up for game time. I go over to the cooler or whatever I need to do to get water on my hands. I put water on my hands. It makes me feel refreshed. And then this is what checks me in. I put water on my face and I hit my face two or three times. And then I put my hands down and go, oh, let's go. Bam. That's what puts me in the moment. That's what puts me in the mindset. And that's what makes me motivated. Tony Robbins, one of the most fantastic, inspirational people in the world, before he steps on stage, he makes his move. For him, he spins around
Spins around.
and then pumps his hand and says, yeah. And for him, that's making his move. For you, what is it going to be to make your move? Jordan Burroughs, the most decorated wrestler of all time in the United States of America, seven-time world champion. For him, in the middle of a match, he'll go out of bounds and he'll go down and he'll adjust his sock. He said right then and there, that's his move. He doesn't need a sock adjusted, but that puts him back in the moment of motivation and purpose. That's number one. What is your move and how do you make your move? What's your sock adjustment? What is that thing for you? Number two, some people before their matches, competition, games, we don't know how to warm up. I'm going to tell you what my coach always taught me is I would get ready to go approach the match and take my shot in competition. He would always feel the back of my neck or the back of my lower back. And if I was sweaty, he knew I was ready. If I was sweaty before my match, he knew I was ready. We can't go into competition without already sweating. We can't expect to warm up and be sweaty after 30 seconds or 2 minutes into the match or the game. It's too late. We get to be sweaty and be ready before moment one ever ticks off the clock. So just do those couple things and you will literally approach competition differently.
Thank you. You know, in 1986, I firewalked with Tony in New York City at 2 o'clock in the morning. So here is this goofy kid, you know, coming up to hang out with another buddy of mine. His name was Mark as well. And we went up there and we learned NLP. We learned firewalking. We spent 6 hours getting ready to get to that level. And when I stepped up onto those coals, baby, I was like, I wasn't thinking cool moss, cool moss, cool moss. I was thinking frozen tundra, baby, frozen tundra, frozen tundra. Ain't burning my feet, right? And I never looked down. And that's what got me through Tony, you know, his unbelievable acceptance. Another great person who has done great things for people that came from an adversarial relationship growing up. And his goal of wanting to feed 1 billion people is just another amazing testament of why those are the kind of people that I look up to and love to be around, because they are the difference makers. They are what kids need this year. And not this year, but in this life. And I know you know this. Sometimes when we have parents, they can be very negative. You know, they'll focus on the missed goal or the missed shoot, you know, on a wrestling hole. They'll focus on the miss as opposed to the great goal. Hey, you know, you had the winning goal, but you missed four other goals today. You know, you should have done that. You should have done that. And I think that positive reinforcement that you get from a coach, from your own coach, And that's why I try to do the kids I train. I make them do 175 push-ups every day. So they got to start in the morning, knock out 20, knock out 20, knock out 20, knock out 20. I said, because you know what? It's a fast twitch muscle. We're trying to get you building up there and just helps you out. So how has a failure or an apparent failure set you up for later success? And do you have a favorite failure of yours? Because you have a lot of them. And when I say failures, I mean, even your story about how your wife got together, how you met and all the, you know, trying to get children, have her get pregnant and then the adoption and then losing those kids. I mean, it's just, could you share something like a favorite failure of yours that got you to the next level?
Oh my goodness. What a great question. I'm going to take this completely out of athletics if you allow me to, because you brought my mind to something that's absolutely applicable here. What athletics has helped me become is a determined, dynamic, and dominant human in life. And I tell you what, you said it. My wife and I come from families, big families. She's one of nine kids. I'm one of seven. And so we thought that we wanted a big family, of course. And after four IVF cycles, which means doctors trying to help, you know, help us have kids, two miscarriages of a little baby girl and a little baby boy, two failed adoptions where we thought we were going to have two beautiful baby girls, and then the mom decided to keep our money. We're hundreds of thousands of dollars into trying to have kids. And we thought we failed. After all these attempts and losing babies and losing money and just losing just our minds and striving to do something that we felt was good, we felt like we were at a dead end. And we decided to look at each other and be like, you know what? Are we going to believe in dead ends, or are we going to continue to strive for new beginnings? And we decided that new beginnings was a better and more positive way to look at life. And as we did that, things changed. I'll never forget thinking that we had failed in so many ways trying to have kids, and then getting a call one morning saying that there's a little baby boy that was born in the Midwest. We live in Utah. 15 hours later, my wife and I are on a plane to go pick up a little baby boy. Shortly thereafter, we were offered a little girl that would be 5 days apart from a different mom than my boy. And then 13 months later, we would go and adopt my oldest boy, his name is Liam. We would go and adopt his younger full-blood brother. What I thought at one point was a complete failure after failure after failure, because we decided to not think those were dead ends and choose new beginnings, 13 months later, we would have three beautiful kids. And I would learn that being a dad is one of the most incredible things I will ever, if not the most incredible thing I will ever do in life, besides being a husband. Oftentimes, just like me at the World Championships, we suffer a loss. And the people around us watch. Just like my little boy Liam cried at the age of 4 years old in the stands watching his dad in second place as the Azerbaijan flag raised up and the national anthem Azerbaijan was played, not the U.S. And when I received that silver medal, I learned that that wasn't a dead end. That wasn't a failure per se. It was a learning experience and it was a new beginning. And a couple days later, with my kids in the audience, being able to receive that gold medal as they wrapped the American flag around their shoulders. And as I stood on the top of the podium, as the American flag rose to the top and the national anthem, for which my brother, you fought for, which I'm so grateful for, and all the other troops.
Thank you.
As that raised to the top and the freedom bells rang, as the national anthem was saying, those moments teach me that the silver medals allow gold medals to happen, that the failures allow incredible championships to become reality. And that was one of my best failures that I would learn from. The best learning experience that would make me the happy man I am today.
Thank you. I love that when you said silver medals turn into gold medals. That's just so well said, because, you know, we live in a day and age, as you know, we all grew up with, you know, always having to strive to be a champion, but not really knowing what that means and what that sweat you have to put into it. You know, what is it? Not everybody can be a world champion, but at least put that mindset in there that you want to shoot for that. So I love that. Ben, here's a question for you. When would you tell parents and high school athletes to get into the game of proper mental side of the game? And is there a way, especially if they're facing some adversities, how that mental side helps with the adversities or challenges that they have?
So if you're asking about when, I'll tell them to do it now. And I'm going to respond from someone else. Like I said earlier, I believe that we're all a sum part of everybody else. And I think this person is very, very valid to quote. There's a man named Kale Sanderson, who in college went 159-0, never lost.
Wow.
And he's the only person to have ever have done that. He's since gone on and coached Penn State, which is absolute set legacies. They just won another national title, winning the national championships this past couple of weeks by over 100 points or so. He said this: my guys don't focus on wins. We focus on progress. We focus on movement. And then he went on to say this: sometimes a win, if it's your top potential, is losing by 2 points. Sometimes a win is getting the pin. Sometimes a win is losing by 7 points instead of 8 points, because that 8th point gives the team another point. You talked about that before this call.
Yes, sir.
Everybody's win is different in life. And if we always, for an example, if we have a young rookie coming in and we're always making sure that if you don't beat Michael Jordan and you're a rookie, then you're a loser. We sometimes put the number sevens in the game against a number 10 and expect them to win automatically. What if they held the number 10 to a level 8 that game in scoring? That is a matter of fact a win, even though there's more points on the other team's scoreboard. What if we actually shot for progress instead of just a W? When I was in the world championships and I lost and I took the silver medal, it wasn't the silver medal I was upset about. It was that I stopped wrestling after being ahead. It was that I stopped progressing. My goal when I went into the world championships again the next couple days wasn't just to win. It was, listen, my goal is to continue to wrestle. And as I bought into that belief, and not just I'm going to go in there and win no matter what. No, it was I was going to go in there and progress, progress, progress. I'm not going to stop wrestling. I'm going to continue wrestling. I'm going to give up second. Very few times in my career did this ever happen. With about 10 seconds left, the guy who I was competing against in the world championships in Greco, he was from Italy, he stopped because he knew that I wouldn't stop. He felt it come out of me. After I turned to my fans, I was like, yeah. And my fans were like, keep wrestling, keep wrestling. He had given up. He had given up because I knew I wouldn't. He knew I wouldn't. So, guys, I'm going to tell you this. As we look for not the win, just like Kale says, but we look for progress, we will find fulfillment in even the losses, because we will have chosen to find progress being fulfilling. As we do that, life will become a whole nother level of happiness. And I think that's what it's about, to find joy and happiness along the journey.
Absolutely. So, you know, to close this out, you know, what are you most excited about coming up with what you're doing? And what can people expect from you and your company next? And if you have any big things coming up, that would be awesome to share with our audience.
I have a couple of huge things coming up. Right now, I am filming a documentary. These guys that are filming it just recently sold their last documentary to Netflix. It is being filmed right now. I have nationals in 25 days in Las Vegas,
God bless
where
you.
I have chosen to do something that I don't know if anybody's ever chosen to do. I'm going to wrestle two different weights at the same time. And in the matter of 3 days, my goal is to accomplish and win four national titles. And I'm going to progress the entire time as my family and my loved ones and my kids watch me the whole time. In the meantime, I'm writing a book looking to launch at the same time as my documentary early 2025. As I do well and progress these next couple of weeks, I'll qualify for the World Championships in Croatia in October. And the most important thing the entire time is for me to show up and show my kids and my loved ones that, guess what? Their dad and their mom still have dreams. And it was like Ed Mallett said, on the stage of the same event that you and I had been to in the past, he said, there's a form of child neglect that we often don't think about. And this insidious form is when parents don't live their dreams. And I'm going to tell you this. On your path to being a parent, on your path to progressing, keep dreaming. Because your kids see you and your life and how life, and it automatically becomes their default way of living. I'm telling you that in warning. I'm telling you that in positivity. I'm telling you that because guess what? How you live is how your kids will live, because that's what they know as being normal. So guys,
yeah.
God bless you. I would love to connect with you on social media, BENKJAR. In all the formats, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, I would love to connect with you. I'd love to pour into you. I'd love to be your fan. And just God bless you guys. Let's rise and let's progress together.
Okay, Ben, thanks very much for joining us on the show. And you, just one thing for you. One of my best friends, if not my best friend, he is the only 9-time Mr. Universe. 72 years old, 72, still competes against the young cats. He's still beating guys in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s. He is the only 9-time Mr. Universe bodybuilding champion. His name is Al Vaughn, cancer survivor, Vietnam War veteran, just a great guy. So, you know, I think that's part of our challenge is we always have to surround ourselves with positive, outbursting people who never want to give up. So with that, Ben, I just want to thank you. And as we wrap up another enlightening episode of Don't Outkick Your Coverage podcast, we want to express our gratitude for all of you shining in and tuning in. So remember, sharing is caring. Share this podcast with a couple of friends and don't forget to shower us with those 5-star reviews, the likes and comments on your engagement, because your engagement fuels our passion for delivering quality and timely content. This is Coach Nolan signing off for next time. And until then, keep striving for excellence. Thanks again, Ben. Have a great day.